Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's new book, Paperboy. To order today, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on store.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We've got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice. Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and the Spectator.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. It's amazing watching the networks try to cover all of these different Trump trials. I mean, I know I was joking about a red zone style network, but it actually would make sense right now because they've got all these different screens. They've got on the bottom right, they've got Trump in New York and he's on lunch break and that's in the corner. And then they're also trying to cover the Supreme Court oral arguments with the Jack Smith immunity case. And then you've got transcripts from Pecker up on the top right. It's a lot to take in. Joining us now is, it's been way too long, one of my favorite guests, Libby Emmons from the Post Millennial. Libby, thank you so much for joining the Grace Curley Show on this Friday afternoon.
Sure thing. Thanks, Grace.
Libby, I wanted to ask you, first off, as I just mentioned, there's so many Trump trials going on, but you recently, for the Post Millennial, wrote about Trump's request for a new trial in the civil case involving E. Jean Carroll. So I would love for my audience, because this case isn't getting as much attention now due to the other bigger situations Trump's dealing with, walk us through Trump's request and the subsequent response from Judge Kaplan.
Yeah, this was really interesting. And you're right, it's not getting a lot of attention. Just to refresh everyone's memory, this is a case where an advice columnist from New York, who was popular in the 90s and, you know, after that, accused Trump of raping her. She made the accusation more than 30 years after the alleged incident. She had written about it for New York Magazine, and she was encouraged to bring this to light by George Conway, who is an anti-Trump guy who is currently working with others in media to try and prevent a Trump second term. So his motivations were pretty clear. Carroll made these allegations. She said that Trump raped her in the dressing room of the Bergdorf Goodman department store in New York City. And she also said that she was trying on lingerie for him in the New York Magazine story that she had written. And she also couldn't say when this happened. She said sometime in the mid-90s. The only way she could narrow it down was that eventually it turned out that the time she specified that it had happened, she also discussed the dress she was wearing, and the dress had not yet come out in Donna Karan's fashion line yet. So all around, spurious allegations is sort of my point. Trump was found civilly liable because the case did not reach the burden of proof for a criminal case. He was found civilly liable for sexual assault, which is a very low burden of proof. And when you dig down into it, it wasn't what you would classically think of as rape. It was more of a groping type of situation. Anyways, you know, that's what it was. So she won her case in New York, and Trump spoke out in his own defense. And when he did so publicly, he was sued for defamation because he wasn't allowed to say that she was wrong or that he hadn't done this, apparently. He lost that. $83 million is what Carroll won in a judgment. She then went on Rachel Maddow's show and said that she would buy Rachel Maddow a penthouse and that all together they would go shopping and all of these things. So Trump was looking for a new trial in the defamation so that he didn't have to pay this $83 million. And he was told that, no, he could not pay. He could not have a new trial. When you read Lewis A. Kaplan, District Judge Lewis A. Kaplan's decision on this, what he says is mostly that the plaintiff proved her point. And so Trump can't have a new trial because the plaintiff proved her point. But that just seems crazy to me, because the whole point is Trump is saying, you know, I think this is all pretty spurious.
Yeah, I'm really glad you gave everyone that update, because you're right. This is it is an important case, but just because of the sheer number of cases he's dealing with, you know, at one point something's going to fall through the cracks or people aren't going to be able to pay attention. Libby, you were one of the first people, just to switch gears here, you were one of the first people I had on when the anti-Israel protests were first starting to pop up after October 7th. We had a conversation about it. And since then, these demonstrations have only escalated, not just in size and not just, but also in intensity, I would say. So I would love to know your reaction. USC has canceled their main graduation ceremony. And there's this argument being had, and it's being had by conservatives as well, about the freedom of speech and whether or not these protesters should be able to disrupt the lives of other students on these campuses. And I would love to hear your opinion on it, since you talked about it with us so long ago, and now it's only gotten worse.
Yeah, so I went to these same type of schools, you know, for sure. These East Coast elitist liberal schools. That's where I got my education. When I was at Sarah Lawrence in the 90s, a bunch of students went on a hunger strike, and it was very difficult for them because they only allowed themselves to eat bagels and orange juice. So these are very similar kinds of students that we are seeing have these protests. They are, you know, very comfortable out there on the quad with all of their tents, which somehow all look exactly the same, no matter what campus you see video of. It's always the same exact tent. So somebody's got to be funding that. But yeah, I think these protests are absolutely ridiculous for a couple of reasons. One reason being that you don't get a say in where the university spends its endowment money or has investments. That's just not what we have going on. I mean, we did see, you know, massive protests against Coca-Cola, I think in the 80s, to divest from South Africa over apartheid. That was effective. But this is a major U.S. ally. It's a much different situation. Israel is engaging in a war of self-defense, and you don't have to like it, but they are certainly not the oppressive colonizers that it's all being made out to be. What these protests really are about is the students can only look at the world through the lens of oppression and colonization and that kind of victimization scenario. They view themselves as victims. They view the Palestinians as victims. And as soon as you view someone as victim in this moral activist realm, that gives a superiority. That gives the moral imperative. Just that's it, you know, that's just the only way that they look at it. And it's really a shame. It shows that these universities that we have entrusted with our stewardship of our culture and history and our nation have really lost the plot entirely. They should probably be defunded. The federal government should not be pushing money at schools that are actively teaching American kids to hate America. Because it's not just anti-Israel stuff that we see out there. We see anti-Jewish stuff out there, and that is entirely against the entire American project. That's just insane. And it should really be against the progressive liberal project, but, you know, that too has clearly lost its way entirely. So, yeah, that's what this is about. These kids see themselves as, you know, liberating saviors who are there to rescue all the brown people who have been victimized. They claim that believing that the nation of Israel has a right to exist is a white supremacist notion, which is always very crazy. I know that when I go out there and defend Israel and defend, you know, the Jewish people, I'm told that I'm Hitler. And I'm like, oh, okay, that makes so much sense, you guys. Good that our schools are teaching you proper history and how to, you know, view the world with not just a lens that is critical in terms of race theory, but is actually critical, where you can learn to think for yourself. We've seen professors out there saying, this is the classroom. Come, you know, it's time to leave the classroom and come be activists. I'm the quad of your $70,000 a year university. So, yeah, it's absolutely stupid.
Yeah, and I love that part you just said about being called Nazis, because Scott Hounsell from Red State, he tweeted this yesterday and it stuck with me. He said, it's a wonder how the same people who throw about terms like Nazi justify their hatred for Jews. And that actually brings me to my next question, which is, do you remember the Babylon Bee headline, Libby, after October 7th? And it was something along the lines of, Hamas terrorists so disappointed that no one believes that they killed all these Jews, even though they went through all the trouble to film it. And
right
now we kind of have a situation where I'm hearing from these Democrat, progressive, sometimes politicians, sometimes just, you know, leaders in the community who are all trying to say that the right wing, you know, Libby Emmons, Grace Curley, that we're painting with a broad brush when it comes to these protests, that we're picking and choosing just to highlight the worst of the protesters. And I feel the same way. It reminds me of that Babylon Bee headline, because I'm like, so they have Hamas flags. They're chanting, we are Hamas. They're saying Zionists don't deserve to live. We love Hamas. And yet if I point out, yeah, these people seem like they're in support of Hamas, I'm the one who's, you know, painting a false narrative.
You know, pointing out the obvious, Grace, that's just going to get you in trouble every time. You're not allowed to do that. When the mob tells you what the truth is, you have to ignore your eyes and ears, as I believe Orwell said, and just go along with what they say. That's the important thing. So don't ever forget that. Yeah, there's this student up at Columbia University. This was Cassie Dillon for the Daily Wire is up there covering this. And there's this queer, non-binary Black student who has been filmed saying, you know, it's time to get the Zionists out of our camp, who was leading the other students in a big chant as they all linked arms to verbally and physically force the Jewish students out of their camp and out of their way. You know, this is what he did. Kathy also found some video that he had posted himself, a live stream where he talked about how Zionists don't have a right to live. And she exposed this, really, you know, good reporting.
Libby, I don't want to interrupt you here, but can I play some of the sound? I have it. It's Kaimani James from Columbia, one of the ringleaders of the anti-Israel encampment at Columbia. Let's just play a little bit to give some context to what Libby's talking about. This is Cut 11.
Zionists, they don't deserve to live comfortably, let alone Zionists don't deserve to live. The same way we're very comfortable accepting that Nazis don't deserve to live, fascists don't deserve to live, racists don't deserve to live, Zionists, they shouldn't live in this world. If we're truly in it.
So this is kind of a theme, too, where, you know, oh, it's not about Jews. We just hate the Zionists. Now, the Zionists do all happen to be Jewish. That's just kind of something that they leave out. But I'd love your reaction to this, Libby.
Yeah, this guy was exposed for this, and he put out a statement this morning trying to walk back the comments where he doubled down his hatred of Zionists. And actually claimed to have been the victim himself when he made those comments. He said that he was upset and that he had been attacked online because he's Black and queer and everyone should feel really sorry for him, but also that, you know, Zionists are evil people. And he did something else which I thought was hysterical, given the, you know, BLM Antifa riots of 2020 and what we all remember about George Floyd. He said, you know, all people deserve to live. And I thought, really, do all lives matter, Mr. James? Are we saying that all lives matter?
Yeah, cause
matter?
That's because that's a cancelable offense as well.
That's cancelable. And you're probably a white supremacist at this point, if that's what you believe, that all lives matter. So, this guy is poorly educated at Columbia University, and somebody should make sure that he probably doesn't get a degree because he clearly hasn't earned it.
Yeah, he talked about far-right agitators who went through his social media until they found... Yeah, that's what you are, Libby. You're a far-right agitator, who we love having on the show, by the way. We have to wrap it up with the far-right agitator right now. We're running out of time. Libby, tell people where they can read all your work.
You can find me on Twitter at Libby Emmons, and you can check out everything we're doing at thepostmillennial.com.
Awesome. Thank you very much. We'll be right back. We'll take your calls, 844-500-4242.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
You know, Biden has done a lot of campaigning on baggage fees at the airport. I think he's got to come out in defense of baggage, period, because it seems like luggage nowadays, no matter if it's at an airport, the Harry Reid airport, and you've got it coming along the carousel and it's going to be swiped up by someone in the Biden administration, or if you're Adam Schiff and you're in San Francisco and your car gets broken into, no suitcase is safe under this president. That should really be the question. You know,
oh dear, Johan tells me your luggage is the luggage of the poor.
You know how people say, are you better off under this president? Is your quality of life better than it was 4 years ago? The real question is your luggage safer than it was 4 years ago? I think that is a pretty easy no. And so people are texting in about Adam Schiff and how his luggage got stolen. He was forced to go to this fancy dinner in San Francisco, and he had to go in regular clothes, like a farmer or something. He had to go in jeans and some sort of...
He was in a juicy sweatsuit.
His casual
velour.
Wear. And this got me thinking, like, if only the mayor, London Breed, had been in San Francisco, maybe she could have helped Adam Schiff, because he's a beautiful person like her, and he's a Democrat, and maybe she could have explained to him, hey, this doesn't happen all the time. This is a one-off. You know, most people live in San Francisco, and especially when Xi Jinping comes to town, we really clean up the streets. I don't want you to get a bad impression of the area. But unfortunately, she's in China looking for pandas.
Panda watch. The mood is tense. I have been on some serious, serious reports, but nothing quite like this. Ching King is inside right now. I tried to get an interview with him, but they said, nope, you can't do that. He's a live bear. He will literally rip your face off.
Yeah, so I'm sure she's getting an update like, oh, there was a break-in of a car. And she probably said, yeah, and another day in the beautiful place known as San Fran. And then her aides probably said, yeah, but it was Adam Schiff. And he's running for senator of California. And he's important. And he does parodies of perfectly good phone calls and makes them into miniature mob movies. We got to get there. We got to fix this. Today's poll question is brought to you by Local Silver Mint, located in Ware, New Hampshire. Silver Dave will work with you directly. Contact him at localsilvermint.com. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is Biden told Howard Stern he will debate Trump. Will his handlers allow him to do it? Yes, reluctantly or under no circumstance?
Under no circumstance. After the pause teleprompter thing, I'm going to say no.
89% of the audience believes under no circumstance.
The Howard Stern live interview did nothing for me, but I do think at some point today we will be replaying that story about his mother and the police.
Or as he calls her, honey.
Honey and all that. That was, you know what, Jared? That was a fever dream story, and I love those. So we will go back to that. But in the meantime, when we come back, there was a coup to try to overthrow Press Secretary KJP, plus Donald Trump's True Social on Bill Barr might be just the laugh you need headed into the weekend. So don't go anywhere. We've got more for you on the other side.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Well, sure. I mean, this is all about the fact that he has a pro-Hamas base, Sean. But listen, Eisenhower did the right thing back in 57 when he sent the 101st Airborne to Little Rock. Why not do it for Jewish Americans? I mean, it shouldn't be that in this country, in this day and age, that if you are a Jewish American, you fear for your life because all of these bougie jihadists at these universities whose brains are addled by TikTok are out there calling for your death, calling for the destruction of the state of Israel. I mean,
that was Senator Josh Hawley, bougie jihadists. Yeah, they're eating $17 jars of nuts and veggie sandwiches from Pret-a-Manger. I mean, things are pretty good. I don't think, and that's really the issue with the sprinklers at Harvard, is that nobody likes to be wet. You know, nobody likes to get soaked, let alone these elitist, wonderful, proactive protesters who are changing the course of history with their work and their hunger strikes and their signs and their Hamas flags and sweatshirts and their yard spinning cult like Manson dances. I mean, you don't want to get those brave soldiers wet. I just wanted to mention here that it's really despicable that USC is canceling that main graduation, because out of all the ways you could handle this, this is the worst way. Like, bending the knee to people who are acting so abhorrently is grotesque. And I should play the rest of that sound, because thankfully Libby Emmons brought it up, because I didn't realize how insane this sound is. This is Kimani James. So Kimani James, you know how yesterday and the day before I said that at Columbia, which really seems to be the bedrock of this protest movement, like a lot of other schools are getting their cues from Columbia. I heard that Columbia was lighting things on fire, so we're lighting things on fire too. I actually shouldn't say that, because I don't know if Columbia had the flares, but you get my point. They're all following the trends that go on at Columbia. And at first, people who were defending these protests, including some nut lady on MSNBC from the New York Times, they were trying to say, well, it's not the students. It's like people who are joining in, people outside the school who are joining in and trying to, bad actors who are trying to hijack the protests and make them look bad. I would just like to say, give these students some credit, okay? They don't need any help when it comes to looking bad. They can handle that one all on their own. They might not be able to handle the sprinklers. They might have to bring in Team Yellow and the buckets to cover the sprinkler situation. But when it comes to looking like horses' asses, they have that down pat. That is what they're all majoring in. And so now we have this student from Columbia, Kimani James, Columbia anti-Israel encampment ringleader. Kimani James rages, Zionists don't deserve to live. I don't know what Kimani James's major is, but I know that James is a spokesperson for Columbia's anti-Israel student group, Apartheid Divest. So definitely a student, right, Jared? We can confirm that. This isn't a situation where we're picking a bad apple who just happened to jump into these protests. So Kimani James, we played this cut already, but it's worth playing again. This was part of the social media content that right-wing agitators like Libby Emmons and others seized and pounced and weaponized on that got Kimani James in so much trouble. Cut 11, please.
Zionists, they don't deserve to live comfortably, let alone Zionists don't deserve to live. The same way we're very comfortable accepting that Nazis don't deserve to live, fascists don't deserve to live, racists don't deserve to live, Zionists, they shouldn't live in this world. If we're truly in it.
Lumping together Nazis and Jews seems to be a very popular hobby for these people. Do you notice that? These protesters, they really like to put Nazis and Zionists underneath the same category. Like, let's create a moral equivalence between the Nazis and the Zionists. They also treat Zionism and Zionists like it's a dirty word. Like, if you say Zionist, then everyone's going to agree with you. Oh, I thought you were talking about killing the Jews or making the Jews uncomfortable living. You're talking about the Zionists? Never mind then. Go for it, Kimani. In that case, you're on the right path. You have the moral high ground. As long as you're talking about Zionists and not Jews. They really do think that the average person, and like Josh Hawley said, the average young person in this country has a brain that is made into mush because of social media, specifically TikTok, which is extremely anti-Semitic in and of itself. But they really think that people are just going to buy this. As long as you say Zionist, you're not going to get any pushback. Well, Kimani James, unfortunately, has figured out that's not the case. But let's play cut 12 before I get to James's response and, you know, violin-style statement.
be glad, be grateful that I'm not just going out and murdering Zionists. I've never murdered anyone in my life, and I hope to keep it that way. I genuinely hope to keep it that way.
That really
doesn't
is.
Sound like he does want to keep it that way.
But you know what, Jared? I'm trying this new thing of self-reflection. You know, I'm trying this new thing. I'm very critical of myself in general, but I really want to, when I'm on the show, I want to be sure that we have these intense conversations about, could we be at fault here? Could this possibly be something we're getting wrong as far right wing agitators? And maybe we aren't appreciative enough that students at Columbia aren't murdering Zionists. Like, did you ever think of that? Did you wake up?
I am the ungrateful sort.
Yeah. Did you wake up today and smell the roses and say, hey, I should really give props and kudos and thanks to all of those brave protesters at Columbia who have yet to murder any Zionists today? Like, I just feel as though you don't do that. I think you're just taking things for granted.
I do. Yeah. You know, I did not wake up and I was not thankful and glad that Kamani James is not just out murdering Zionists. I'm going to work on that. It's a personal thing.
Yeah, you should. You should. And you should, honestly, you should apologize.
And I am all for free speech.
Right.
But people like Kamani Jones, people who have this. Kamani James, who have this worldview, this philosophy. It is incompatible with Western society. It is incompatible with Western society. And there are places you can go where you can think and talk like this freely and it's not a problem, you know? I'm just saying.
I know what you're saying, Jared, but I also think that there's two things. One is, you have the freedom of speech. If you want to be an anti-Zionist, anti-Jew,
absolutely,
you have the freedom of speech to do that in this country. You can be as loud and as obnoxious and as abhorrent as you want to be. And I really don't have an issue with that, because my whole theory is you're just showing people who you are. You're just exposing yourself to people as an anti-Semite. And if that's how you want to, like, if Kamani James, and, you know, unfortunately, I'm sure Kamani James will get some wonderful job in the State Department within the next year. So I'm not suggesting that this is going to hurt Kamani James's future career prospects. But what I'll say is, when people talk about freedom of speech, they're conflating it with these schools protecting the other students. And that isn't part of freedom of speech. Yes, Kamani James can go on social media and say horrible things about Jewish people, about Zionists, about how we should all be, you know, so grateful that he has not murdered anyone. And that's fine. But when these students are disrupting the day-to-day life of other students, or making it hard for other students to go to class, or making it hard for other students to go to graduation or to live their lives, that is not part of freedom of speech. These schools have policies. They have policies that you have to abide by. And the states that these schools are in have laws that you have to abide by. And so, no, for people who are trying to say, well, I thought you conservatives cared about free speech. I do care about free speech. I have no issue with Kamani James going on social media and making an ass of himself. I'll play it on the show, in fact. We'll play it three or four times for you. But you don't get to, your protesters or your, you know, your encampment doesn't get to assault police officers, doesn't get to stop people from going to class, doesn't get to stop people from getting to have a graduation ceremony. That is not, you know, what does Nancy Pelosi say? You can't shout wolf in a crowded theater. And far be it from me to contradict anything that the master legislator is saying. Hey, but I do want to just give everyone an update on Kamani James now, because now that people are listening and watching the videos that Kamani James filmed of himself and put out onto the internet, we're the ones to blame. This is the amazing part. It's like, this is how dare you make me bleed my own blood. This is in personified.
Yeah, this was the Virginia Senate candidate there who leaked videos of her own stuff with her husband. I can't remember what her name was.
Oh, Suzanne.
Yeah, but it was...
Oh, Howie's definitely screaming right now. Susan, I'm not... The old gray mare, she ain't what she used to be. I can't do it. Gibson? Is it Gibson?
Susanna Gibson, yes.
She didn't leak. She put videos of her and her husband having sex on some website where you could get Chatterbait, I think it's called. You can get tokens and stuff. See? Look at that. The brain's still working. Sharp as a tack. And she put those up. And then, yeah, when people saw the video, she was like, this is revenge porn. It's like, no, you took the videos and you put them online so you could get tokens for it. And now people watch the videos and we're the ones who expose this. Like, you put this online. This is the same thing. You record yourself proudly saying that Zionists don't deserve to live. And then people find the recording and say, that's weird that you said that. That's problematic. And you go, how dare you? How dare you? Play my own videos.
Nobody makes me bleed my own blood.
Yeah, so Kamani James now says, I also want to add more context to my words, which I regret. Zionists don't deserve to live comfortably. Please give us more context. I'm sure that there's a lot of nuance involved in this. You should also be happy that I'm not murdering Zionists. Now let me give you context to what that means. Far-right agitators went through months of my social media feed until they found a clip that they edited without context. When I recorded it, I had been feeling unusually upset after an online mob targeted me because I'm visibly queer and black. Ah, right. So you're the victim here saying how we should also be happy that you're not murdering people and you're the one who we should be apologizing to. You know what else I take issue with? If you're going to put up a video or a statement being like, I regret what I said, and then you're also going to say, but it was taken out of context and I didn't do anything wrong. Both of those things can't exist. Like, you either regret what you said or it was taken out of context and you have nothing to apologize for. But you can't regret what you said and then go, but that's not really what I said, or that's not really, you know, that is not fair. Well, if it's not fair, just say, hey, that was taken out of context. But don't say, I regret it. Oh, I'm exhausted, man.
That's the context.
I actually have a really fun story that I want to get to involving KJP and this coup. It's a great read, Jared. It's in the New York Post. Is it by...
They start calling her KJP.
It's by Stephen Nelson. Stephen Nelson is excellent. We've had him on the show once. He's hard to get because he's actually a reporter, so he has things to do. But he was the guy who cracked the case with the dogs at the White House. He's always on top of these stories that I find... so interesting, because it's the palace intrigue that we never really get with the Biden administration. And now my question is, after I read this to you and you guys can let me know, maybe we'll get to it at 2:30. Do you think Peter Ducey is going to ask KJP about this story that claims that Anita Dunn, along with other people in the White House, were trying to have this cloak and dagger operation where they were trying to get her to leave her post as press secretary and bring in someone new because she was failing in such a spectacular fashion? Now, there's people at the White House who are saying, this is so not true. This is bogus. I think it's true. And I'm curious if the one horse pony soldier is going to bring it up to KJP. We'll talk about that when we come back. In the meantime, though, I want you all to get your hands on the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. Not one, not two, but the 3-pack. This is such a great device. And I want to let people know, sometimes you get devices to purify the air and they're massive and they look like machines from a Nutty Professor. This is a really small, compact device. You plug it into the wall. It's not on the floor. There's no wires you're going to trip on. And it's going to purify the air. And it's not just for pollen and allergens, which I know a lot of people are worried about right now. It's also, Jared, for smells. Because, you know, if you're cooking or if, you know, you have a musty basement, smells can start to pop up into the air.
Yeah, and the 3-pack is a great idea if you're one of these universities and you get the smelly hippies camping out. You get a long enough cord, you can plug it in, you just turn on the thunderstorm, toss it into the middle of the tent city, and you could even get rid of that odor. Because what the thunderstorm does is it ionizes the air, which creates a super oxygen, and that's what eliminates odors that are in the air, the same way it can do it with allergens and pollutants.
Yeah, with a thunderstorm, you can enjoy this beautiful time of year without having to reach for the tissues. It eliminates any sort of allergen. So if you're someone who deals with pollen and all that comes with that, this is a great device. Get your hands on the three-pack. Go to EdenPureDeals.com, and then you're going to enter code GRACE3. Again, this is such a great deal. I want you to take advantage of it. Go to EdenPureDeals.com and use code GRACE3 so you get the three-pack special. Speaking of the tent city, Libby Emmons said something that I think kind of goes along with what you were asking about with the Columbia protester diet. Like, who's providing all these sandwiches and all of this Dunkin' Donuts coffee and the artisanal nuts and all these things? Libby said all these tents at these universities look exactly alike. That's a good point. That makes me wonder, who's providing the tents? What organization is being so generous in providing these students, these brave, brave Hamas-hugging hippies, with the tents? That's what we need to know. We'll be back. We'll take your calls. Don't go anywhere.
Hi, it's Toby from Cape Gunworks. I'm taking all your firearm and self-defense questions every Tuesday. Join Grace and me for 2A Tuesday, Tuesdays at 2 p.m.
This is the Grace Curley Show.
You know what's hysterical? I'm reading this piece about the proposed endowment tax on Harvard. All of these economists, all these Harvard grads, all these professors who boast about, you know, paying your fair share, and they like to see everything through a Marxist lens. They're not on board with Harvard having to pay a tax on the endowment. It's like, at one point it says, if the bill passed, Harvard would miss out on $21 billion of potential gains. By 2034, the university's endowment would be surpassed by its out-of-state peers, Yale, Princeton, and the University of Texas, for the first time since 1986. Oh, the horror! I'm clutching my pearls! The University of Texas! It's going to surpass the Harvard endowment? And there's all this pushback in the Crimson. They have all these quotes from people, Larry Summers, who I actually do like, but Jonathan Gruber, the chair of MIT's economics department. They're all saying this makes no sense, you know, putting this 2.5% tax. What do you mean? What do you mean it makes no sense? We could use that money. We could use that money to help people, to improve things. I'm all for Harvard making billions of dollars, Jared. I just want them to have to pay their fair share. Really quickly, Tommy, you're next up. Go ahead, Tommy.
Hi, Grace. Thank you. Yes, Grace. If I was caught burning the flag, Grace, there's no gray area with me. I expect that I'd be put up against a wall and shot. There's no gray area there.
No, I don't think that's the proper punishment. Thank you for the call, though, Tommy. 844-500-4242. We've got a lot more in today's show. We've got Emma Foley coming up with Last Call. I do want to talk a little bit more about the Harvard endowment tax, this proposed tax that won't actually go through, but it would be hilarious if it did. And what I'm most excited about, there's a coup. There was an attempted coup in the White House. This was not the Trump coup. This is a different coup against KJP. And it was less of a coup and more of a, hey, can you move on to something else? Because you're not very good at this. We'll talk about that when we come back. And don't let me forget Trump's social media post about Bill Barr. All of that next.